Sunday Chof Hei Shvat, Rabbi Joseph Perlman, Inyan, the lessons in humility from the Mishkan.
Right, the Mishkan, as you know, was set up by Moshe Rabbeinu and the Ribbono Shel Olam to do it, and there are very many deep thoughts about the Mishkan itself. You've looked through the Malbim, it tells you that a little cosmos on its own, it tells you how the whole world is constructed in the same way as the Mishkan. What I want to look at is some lessons that we learn from the way the Mishkan was constructed and how they dealt with the items within it. And it comes clear from many places that the Mishkan was being madgish, it was being emphasizing the importance of the midah of anova, which we translate into English as humility. In order to understand this better, we've just got to define what anova is. Anova is the opposite of gaivo. Gaivo is the one midah which you have to avoid at all costs. If you look at the Rambam Hilchos Deos, he goes through the different midahs and he talks about how they operate, but he says there's one midah which you've got to avoid absolutely and completely, and this is based on a Gemara in Sota, I think, that you have you've got to keep completely away from the midah of gaiva. Most midahs are not good or bad. It's how you use them. You can use, for example, the midah of chesed or rachamim for good. To help people normally is a good thing to do, but there can be bad chesed and bad rachamim. You, for example, if on Yom Kippur you want to give food to somebody who doesn't really need to eat, that's not called chesed at all. You think it's chesed, but it's a bad chesed. You mustn't do that. So any midah can be used for good, or you can use the bad, depending upon the circumstances. But there's one midah which is completely bad, and that's the midah of gavo. And if you look at the Rambam points out that there's absolutely no heter whatsoever to have gavo in any situation, and he combines it. He's got all different midahs in different paragraphs, but he puts the midah of gavo and kaas together. To get into a bad temper is a form of gavo, because everyone should be able to control their temper. If you can't control your temper, that really means that you're a bal gavo, because you realize that you think that you're more important than the Ribbono Shel Olam. You should never be in a temper. So kaas and gavo, and the many ma'amorim in Chazal, which tell us the bad mid of kaas, says, for example, kilo avod avodah zarah, because if you are koyes, you are angry, that means you've forgotten that there's a Ribbono Shel Olam who's running the world, and whatever happened to you is not because it's just a happenstance, it just happened. It's because the Ribbono Shel Olam decreed that whatever bad thing happens to you, happens to you. So road rage or anything like that is completely out. If somebody smashes into the back of your car, it's not that person who's done it. He's just the shliach of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So you should say, thank you very much for smashing into my car. The Ribbono Shel Olam has given me a message that I've got to behave myself better. No, we're not many of us are that madrega. But nonetheless, you have the person who smashed into it, you can claim your money back from him. And also there's a principle of Ein Magalgalin, Magalgalin is a chusad zakai, and a bad things through a bad person. So he's a bad person for having done it. And you can take him to Beis Din, and you can report him to the police and all the rest of it, but you mustn't do it because. You mustn't get angry, because he's only the shliach of the Ribbono Shel Olam to teach you a lesson. Now, that's therefore kaas and gaavo you've got to avoid altogether. But the counterpart of kaas is anova. Anova is humility, and if you look through the Toma Devora, he points out that humility is the one midah from which we reach the highest level of Torah. That's the one midah we should all work on. Now, anova doesn't just mean being mevatel yourself completely. That's not anova. Moshe Rabbeinu was onov mikol odom. He was the greatest onov of all, and yet he was the greatest person. And don't tell me he didn't know he was the greatest person. Of course he knew he was the greatest person. It means how you use what you've got. And in fact, Rabbi Volba used to say that it's more important to know your qualities than to know your faults. Of course, you've got to know your faults, and you've got to do teshuvah. And when it comes to Yom Kippur, we do our chait and we do our shamnu, and we're very, very sorry for all the faults that we've done. And we look through our work during the year, and we see where we've gone wrong. But it's more important than that is to recognize where your strengths are. Because if you don't know where your strengths are, you won't be able to even implement the question of being misaken in the averas. For example, if you feel, I'm not really a very awake person. I like to sleep in every morning. I haven't got this courage of getting up. That's wrong. Everybody's got the quality of having the courage to get up and be on time for davening. There's no reason why you shouldn't do that. So realize you're a person who's got the quality of being able to stay awake and get up for davening. Or any other midah. If you're, let's say, an artistic person, you've got to recognize I'm artistic. And because I'm artistic, I can make beautiful paintings. I can make beautiful things for the Beis HaMedrash and for Chinuch and for all sorts of things. Don't run yourself down. But gaiva means that you stuff it down somebody else's throat. You show how important that you are. That's not what you've got to do. What you've got to do is know who you are and act accordingly in the right circumstances and be humble about it. That's humility. To pretend that you're something you're not is silly. That's just inverse gaiva. A person, let's say a great rav comes into the shul. If he were to stand at the back of the shul, I've been a grace of honor, I must stay at the back of the shul. And the tzibur wants him to come to the front. So the answer to that is, if he stays at the back of the shul, that's not anova. That's a form of gaiva. I'm so great that I'm able to be a great honor. That's why he stands at the back. If in fact he pushes himself to the front the moment he comes in, that's gaiva, because he's trying to tell everybody that I'm the most important person, therefore I should have the best seat. But if he waits and he's brought forward, he shouldn't refuse if his correct position is at the front, because it's a comfort for the tzibur to be at the front. He's got to realize that. So that's what anova is. Anova is recognizing your qualities, recognizing who you are, and acting appropriately in those circumstances. So we all know what our great strengths are. A person who's, as mentioned, about an artistic person, maybe he'll become a sofa. He'll use it properly. Just to give you an illustration of it, let's say that somebody, chas v'shalom, has a heart attack, and the biggest surgeon in the world happens to be in the place at the same time. If that guy, somebody says, "Are you really? Are there any doctors here?" And he says, "No, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a surgeon. I'm no good. I'm a big onov. I can't do anything." That's shvichas damim, because he should come along and say, "I'm the biggest surgeon in the world. Let me get to that person quickly, because I know how to save his life." That's not gaiva. That's being common sense. That's being doing the right thing. You could be an onov and do that. So that's the geder of anova. Now, bearing that in mind, let's now look through the various places in the Mishkan which teach us that lesson. I've listed them all. I don't think we're going to get through everything, but you can take it all away and you can see. These are just some places in the Mishkan where we get the message. The first one comes from the Aron Kodesh. If you look at the remarkable thing in the Aron Kodesh, everyone probably knows it already. The Aron Kodesh is the only one of the items in the Mishkan which is given completely in broken amos, broken measurements. You look at all the others, with the exception of the Shulchan we'll come to in a second, they're all in complete amos, complete measurements, which makes sense. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a Mishkan and he gave measurements. You expect the measurements to be in full detail and without any sort of bits and pieces. You have an ammo, a full ammo. Why make it a broken ammo? Yet in the case of the Aron Kodesh, every single measurement is broken. And the Mefarshim say the reason why that is, if you want to learn Torah, don't think that you know it all. You're broken. You haven't got the full way yet. One pshat is broken in the sense that you really feel that you haven't achieved everything, and the other pshat is broken, you only got halfway, you haven't got the full way to the learning the Torah. Nobody can know the whole Torah. The Shulchan presents a little problem. It's because it's the only one which is part whole and part broken. The length and breadth are in whole amos, but the height is in a broken amos. I've set it out in front of you, it 2 by 1 by 1.5. Now, why should that be? So the Mefarshim explain that in the case the Shulchan represents Gashmius, it represents life, the daily, like your Parnosa, etc. Whereas the Mizbeach represents the Keser Kuhuna. They say, for example, the three Ksorim, the Keser Kuhuna, Keser Torah, Keser Malchus. The Aron represents one, the Mizbeach represents the Keser Kuhuna, and the Shulchan represents the Keser Malchus, etc. So, the Keser of Torah, we've just discussed, that nobody should ever think that they know the whole Torah, therefore it's all in broken bits. In the case of Malchus Keser of Kuhuna, Avoida, that's got to be a Dover Sholem. That's why the Mizbeach is completely rounded off. But the Shulchan is the problem. It's part rounded and part broken. And the reason that it suggests is this: in Gashmus, you should always feel you've got what you want. Somech b'chelko, it's all perfect. Whatever Hashem has given you, be satisfied with. Don't think that you've got to aspire for more. That's in the basic Gashmus. But the Gashmus also has a ruchnius element to it. When you've got food and you've got parnasa, you can't just keep it all for yourself. You've got to help others. You've got to do tzedakah. You've got to give hachnasas orchim. There are other mitzvahs which give the spirituality to your shulchan. In that sense, you've got to be the broken amber, just like the Sefer Torah. You've got to, when you aspiring to ruchnius, don't think that you've achieved it all. When it's gashmus, fine, everything's fine, you've got everything. But in the ruchnius, then that's the height. It's broken. So the shulchan is in the length and breadth, it's full amos, but in the height, it's in broken amos for that reason. Similarly, the Keruvim, where are the Keruvim? Now, why should the Keruvim be on top of the Aron Kodesh? Well, one explanation is that our future depends upon our children, it depends on Chinuch, and therefore we must put the children in the top spot. So, because the Keruvim looks, the face of the children, it looks like Chinuch, it looks like the for children. That's one explanation. But I once heard from Rabbi Chonhoven that the Keruvim are on top because there is no gaiva whatsoever. A child doesn't have any gaiva whatsoever. He doesn't know what it's all about. He doesn't know anything about kovod. And therefore, on top of the Aron Kodesh, you put little children, so to speak, to teach you that this is the way we should behave ourselves. We should be like little children. Everything just simple and straightforward without any airs and graces. Next, we come to the basis of the whole Mishkan, one could say, is the Adonim. The Adonim were on the ground and they supported the Keroshim and the Urias on top of the Keroshim. They were the basis of the whole Mishkan. And it's interesting. Their name is Adonim Sockets. Why Adonim? Adonim is the same word as Hashem. Adon, as if it's the master of the whole lot, is the base. This is what we said before. The Adonim are called Adonim because they are the support of the whole edifice, and they're at the bottom. So there's no gaiva in that. But they are showing anova by being on the base of the whole of the Mishkan. The whole structure depends upon them, and they are considered Adonim. They are considered to be the thing which holds the whole binyan up. Next, we go on to the Big Day Kuhuna. Take the Me'il as a beautiful example in the case of the Me'il. The Me'il was Kula Techeles. Kula Techeles means it's perfect in its construction. The Techeles, we say, is Doma Liyam, Liyam Doma Lerokia, Rokia Doma Lekisea Kovod. The Techeles, we have it in our tzitzis, or some of the Radzinas have it nowadays, but we're Mirza Hashem, when Mashiach will come, we'll get the Chilozim back, and we'll have Techeles in our tzitzis. The idea is to remind us of the Rebbeinu Shalom. That's what the meal is, completely full of Techeles. And the Chofetz Chaim goes through each part of the meal to show how it's a protection against lashon hara, because it's in it you'll find the it's got its double protection, like the lips and the teeth protect the tongue and so on. And the whole thing of the meal is represented as a protection against the lashon hara. And the Kohen Gadol used to wear it, Bevoyer El HaKodesh, of Nishma Koyle Bevoyer El HaKodesh. You should be able to hear the Kohen Gadol coming when he comes to the Kodesh. And what are the bells made of? The bells which make the noise are made of gold. Your speech should be golden, should be beautiful and pure. That's how the speech should be. But, parma and verima, it's got to be contained within a parma. There's a machluk in Rashi and the Ramban, whether the gold bell, the parma, was inside the rimmer and it was covered by it, or whether they were in between, as Rashi says, one after the other. It doesn't matter which. The principle is the same. Protect your speech by carefully making sure that the right thing comes out. But the interesting thing is, where would you expect that to be? Our mouths are in our head. It's true, our mouths are below our eyes and below our nose, but it's not in the bottom. Whereas in the me'il, where were the bells? The bells were actually at the bottom of the me'il. You would expect them to be on the shoulders or somewhere much higher, but they were actually right at the bottom. And that's the message of the me'il, was telling us your speech should be ba'anovo. It should be low down, in the sense that you should realize that you've got to protect it so that it shouldn't give the wrong message of being speech of gavo. It's got to be speech of anova. And then v'nishma kol bevoya lakodesh. That's the message, or one of the messages of the meal in next week's sedra. The next raya I'm bringing is from another one of the big day kuna, the mitznefes. The Gemara in Erchin tells us what the different begodim did. What their protection? The mitznefes is a protection against gassus ruach. Gassus ruach is another expression of gavo. It means somebody who thinks too much of himself and is full of himself. And the mitznefes was a protection against that. And that was put on top of the head. It's mechapa on people who had gassus ruach. There's a form of Azus, it's a form of basically thinking too much of yourself, and we have to have the protection. And it's mentioned also that a person should not go without a hat. The Gemara says in Kiddushin there that you must always keep our heads covered, because that's a protection against gassus ruach. In fact, the Yiddish word for a kapel is a yarmulke. And somebody once pointed out that yarmulke is spelt Yud Aleph Reish Mem Yud Lamed Kuf Aleph, at the side here, which is an anagram of Yirei Elokim. Yarmulke is a Yirei Elokim, because you put, some people call it the Yid lid, but what it means is something which protects you and makes you realize that there's like a Ribbono Shel'olam on top of you. Not the most important thing in the whole world, there's a Ribbono Shel'olam on top. And that's why we are forbidden to walk around with the head uncovered. Then, and the mitznefes is another remez to teach us that we have to be ba'anovo. I'm just going to jump to the bottom to deal with it, in case we don't get through to it there. At the very bottom you see the Avnei Shoiham and the Avnei Miluim were part of the items of the Mishkan. There's a question of how you calculate the items of the Mishkan, and some say this, they didn't include that because something different, but in calculating the number of how many things were. But it's certainly mentioned in the Torah as being one of the items which were prepared for the Mishkan. The problem is, they were the most expensive items that you could imagine. Far more expensive than gold, far more expensive than silver, and certainly far more expensive than bronze. So why does it tell us at the beginning, bring Zov, Kesef, and Nechoshes, instead of mentioning the Avnei Miluim and Nechoshes at the very beginning? They should have been mentioned first. You mentioned the most important, the most valuable things first. The answer they give is, the reason why they left us at the bottom is because they were brought by the Nesiim. And unfortunately, the Nesiim showed a certain amount of gaiva, because they said, let the Tzibur bring everything, we'll bring whatever they don't bring. We're the great ones, we've got the wealth, we'll bring everything that nobody else could do. And that was a shtickle gaiva in what they represented themselves. In fact, they got punished for it later. Remember, they lost the Yud of Nesiim, the year there was a chos, written chosse in one place to show that they hadn't behaved correctly. When you want to start off a new thing, be the first one to bring. Don't say, let everybody bring everything and I'll bring what's left. You go in first. Bring what's necessary. Make sure that you show his slavas for the inyan that you're going to do. You're going to build a new Beis HaMikdash. Be there first. The rich people say, we'll bring what we can. Of course, you've got to allow other people to bring things too. But don't just leave everything to everybody else and say, we will bring whatever's missing. Because they did that, they were punished, so to speak, by their contribution being downgraded to the bottom of the list. So there, even though the Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Shoam were so vitally important and so very, very expensive and should have been mentioned at the very top, they were left at the very bottom to show that the Nesi'im hadn't behaved quite as they should have done. Again, we see this idea that the Mishkan is emphasizing proper behavior and humility rather than gaiva. The one of the best, I think, Raya's, which I like the best, is the letter Vov. Now, we know that in the Mishkan there are all sorts of items, and one of the most insignificant of all the items were the Vovim. What were the Vovim? There were hooks. There were different types of hooks. There were crossim, which they were visible. But the Vovim, they went and kept the areas together, and they were not visible. They got covered over. They disappeared. There were little hooks. And you're all probably aware of the famous story about Moshe Rabbeinu, which is brought in the Rishonim in Parshas Pekudei. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu was accused of embezzlement. Can you imagine the great Moshe Rabbeinu? They thought, you've made yourself rich at our expense. But Moshe Rabbeinu was a very good accountant, and he decided he's going to make an account of everything as we find in Pekudei. He made an account for the gold, and everything was made carefully worked out. He came to the silver, and he couldn't balance the books. There was some silver missing. And he was very, very upset about it. So what did he do? He prayed to the Rebbeinu Shalom, and all of a sudden he opened the drawer, and out of the drawer came out 15 vovin, the 15 silver vovin left over, and he jumped for joy because he realized that the balance of the silver, which he couldn't account for, most of it went into the Adonim, but there was some silver he couldn't account for, and he realized what it was, they were in the vovin. He jumped for joy, and then he was massacred as a result of that. We've part of davening. Do you remember which part of davening I'm talking about? Anybody know? V'yatziv v'nochem v'kayim v'yoshem v'nehem v'yov v'chov v'nechem v'noim v'noir v'yadim v'sikon v'kub v'tov v'yofa. 15 vovin. Moshe jumped for joy. And as a result of that, he said, after Krishna, we're going to say 15 vovin. That's where they come from. That's why we say all that. Moshe jumped for joy. The number 15 represents joy. So it's up to discussion about how 15 comes to be the figure of happiness and joy. Well, Pesach's on the 15th, Sukkot is on the 15th, Tu B'Shvat's on the 15th. Where the center of the month, that's 15. That's joy. That joy he brought into the Vovin because he was so excited that he'd been proved that everything was fine. So these Vovin, these tiny insignificant things, made Moshe Rabbeinu tremendously happy when he found the 15 Vovin. But look, let's look at the Vovin. I made a whole list of little points. They're little and unobtrusive, you can't find them. That's the mice of Moshe Rabbeinu. He lost them. He couldn't see where they went. In fact, if you have to look at a word, you never quite know whether there's a vav in the middle of the word or not, because you never know whether the word's with a vav or without a vav. It's very difficult to remember. And in fact, you find that... I'll give you a lovely example of Mole V'chosa. In this week's Sedra, it talks about the Shemen Lam Mo'er. Do you know whether it's got a vav in it or not? Shemen Lam Mo'er? What? And in fact, it's completely the opposite of what you would expect. Most of the words in Truma are mole, because everything in the beginning of Truma was beautiful and fine. But when it came to Vayaka Pekudi after the Egel, most of the words which were mole in Truma and Tetzaveh became chosa in Vayaka Pekudi, because they lost some of their significance, because by having worshipped the Egel, they weren't quite what they were at the beginning. It wasn't quite the same Oran as before, after as before. The one exception is the word Shemen Lamor. It's the other way around. Shemen Lamor is chosa in this week's Sedra, You have to check in what it's like in Vayakra. But this week said it's certainly chosa. Now, why should that be? It should have been perfect like all the rest. But the answer is very simple. The oil wasn't for light. Do we really need light? Did a bunch of need the menorah to make light from? Of course not. He had the light. The menorah was for spiritual light. It wasn't for physical light at all. And therefore, the mo'er is written chosa. The lack of the vav teaches us that it was something which was not as physical as the other items, and therefore, by on the contrary, had it put it with a vav, it would have had the wrong effect. It would have said this was a really good light. It doesn't want to say that. It wants to say all the other things are fantastic. They're all full, but the mo'er, the shemen, that was not as physical as the rest, and therefore the vav got left out. So the vav is teaching us all sorts of lessons, and yet it's a defective letter. The vav keeps dropping out all the time. You never know whether it's there or not. Going through the list, you very rarely find a vav commencing a noun in Tanakh. How many names of people can you tell me begin with the letter vav? We used to play a game in Sunderland. My father and we were on the walk to Shul had a game. You said a name of a person, and the next person had to start another name with the last letter of the previous name. That was the game that was played as children. Good game to play it. So Avraham, next person would say Moshe, the next one would say Hevel, etc. Well, I developed the propensity of finding every word which ended with the letter Vav. If I could find a name that had ended with a Vav, I'd use that, because that would be a trick question for the next guy. So if I had a name beginning with a Mem, I would say Matis Yahu. The next guy would have to have a vav in his he was stumped, finished. How many names in Tanakh do you know beginning with the letter vav? You've got Vashti and then Megillah, but let's in Chumash. I've just written down the ones that occur in Chumash here, just to give. I don't know more than that. There's Nachbi ben Vofsi, but apart from him, the others are a bit schwach. You've got v'ano is a shaila, whether v'ano is a vav, which is a vav conjunctive, or whether in fact it's part of the name. That's very, very dicey. And you es vohev besufo, really it's es and hev. But some say vohev was his name. So in the game you can get away with it, because at least there's one shitter which says the name was vohev. But it's not probably so. But apart from that, you can't find words beginning with vav, not nouns. On the other hand, which letter would you say occurs most at the beginning of any word in Chumash? It's obviously a vav. Vayomer, vayadaber, some psukim and some sedras, 90% of the sedras beginning psukim with vavs. So throughout, and do you know how many vavs there are in the whole of Torah? Far more than any other letter. Even though you don't find it at the beginning of a word, it's all over the place. Hundreds and thousands of vavs everywhere, and yet not at the beginning of a word. Not beginning of a noun, I should say, but no, there are plenty at the beginning of words. Every posuk starts with a vav almost. In fact, if you start at the beginning of Bereshis, after the base of Bereshis, do you know how many psukim go from there with a vav? 33 psukim after the base of Bereshis all start with the letter vav. None of them are nouns. It's all va this and va that and va the other. But that's what the vav is. So what's going on here? The vav is a letter which somehow or other is unobtrusive, defective. It can't start a noun. And yet, it occurs more than any other time. If you're looking at Sefer Torah, although this is not halacha, and there are people are very against this, but the Minhag HaOlam is definitely to start every Yeriah with a Vav, with the exception of Bekor Shmo. There are five, the six, one of which is a Vav, but that means the five Yeriahs which may not start with a Vav, like the Beis of Bereshis, the top of the Yeriah is the Beis of Bereshis, and you've got the Simon is Bekor Shmo. But apart from that, the Sofrim have the Minhag that every Yeriah has to start with a Vav. Why should that be? We're running. What time are we supposed to conclude? Is it half an hour? Am I allowed to go on a few minutes? I know in the other place, if I go over the time, you get into trouble. We've got a couple of minutes. Sundays are different. All right, let's see if we can get through this. So, we said that the Vav also has many, many functions. Many more than any other letter. A Vav is a mechaber. It adds things, joins things together. You've got Vav Ahipuch, a Vav which converts things from past to future and future to past. You've got Vav, Vav Machalek. Vav can divide things up. Vav Moisif Alinyan Rishon. You've got a Vav which is a limud, which teaches us that you've got to bring in everything from the previous part, like V'elah HaMishpatim. Vav Moisif. You've got Elah HaDvarim and V'elah Shemos. One is Moisif and one is separate. So the Vav basically has many, many grammatical functions, past to future, and all the other things I've mentioned. It's got more functions than any other letter you can think about. But now let's look at the word. Each letter has a significance. The word Aleph, for example, Aleph means to teach. The Aleph of Yiddishkeit is to teach. Aleph means to teach. It's the first letter it teaches. The gematria of Aleph, Aleph Lamed Pei, comes to 111, 111. Because Aleph is first, 111, etc. Now, if you look at the Vav, whichever way you look at the Vav, you're going to get the same thing. Number one, Vav is it's palindromic. There are only three letters which are palindromic: the Vav, the Mem, and Nun. All other letters, the pronunciation of the letters is not palindromic. Palindromic means you read it front or back. However you spell Vav, it's read forward or backwards, and that's the essence of a person who's a bar anova, a humble person, is toichoi kebaro. His inside is like his outside. They're not all false airs and graces. And it's possibly quite significant that the Mem, Nun, and Vav are the first three letters of the Menorah, because those are the three letters which are palindromic. Mem, you read it backwards or forwards, Nun, and Vav. But if you look at the gematria of the word Vav, it's either 12 or 13 or 22. Vav can be written Vav Vav, which is 12. It can be written Vav Aleph Vav, which is 13. Or Vav Yud Vav, which is 22. Whichever way you look at it, you've got a number which is absolutely full of significance. 12 represents the Yud Beis Shvatim, it's well known, the first two Pesukim of Krishma. The number of 12 is a very, very, very significant Jewish number. 13, I don't even have to talk about. Everybody knows about Bar Mitzvah, about the Yud Gimel Midas. Or 22, which is the Chof Beis Osius of the Aleph Beis, which has got lots of significance. Whichever gematria you want to take in the Vav, it's there. It's got something about it which is special. Even its number 6. 6 is the limit of nature. Sheshes Yom Tavod. 6 is the 6th of Sivan, which when the Torah was given. 6 has very, very many significances, like the Shisha Sidra Mishnah. The number, the Vav is completely, whichever way you look at it, this Vav is absolutely full of meaning, full of all sorts, and yet you don't see it. What's going on here? The answer, this is a message. These Vavim are the clearest message that we could have, that you've got to be like it. You've got to be insignificant, bottle, hidden away, so to speak. But you come out at the right time. When it's necessary, you make yourself felt like Moshe Rabbeinu, he was a man of mode, kept himself to himself. But when it was necessary, he would stand up against Dosan Vaviram. He would tell Klal Yisrael what to do. He went and got the Torah. He didn't say, I'm such a big honor, I can't walk into the Anan Va'arofa because it looked Balgaivadik for me to do it. Did he do that? Of course not. Moshe Rabbeinu knew he was the right person to do that. He had to go and be Mekabel the Torah. That was his tafkid in life. And it's the same as the letter Vav. The Vav is completely hidden. It disappears. It's not there. But when necessary, it comes to the front. It's most important of all letters, probably. In fact, the Vav is the Mechaber of the two parts of the Shem Havaya. It's Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei. Yud-Kei is one part, and Vav-Kei is a separate part. The two together, you put them together, you get the Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei. It's a special inyan, and the Vav is that chibur of the Shem Kodesh. Perhaps, this is a little bit of a joke, but in fact, the one letter, in this week's Seder, we've been talking about the Vav, the one letter where the Rishonim seem to have a Vav and we don't, remarkable thing, very rare that this should happen. But both Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and Chizkuni, I mentioned the point here, if you look at the Perek Chofei, Posek Chofei, they all have a Vav which we don't have in our Sefer Torah. We don't have that vav in our Sefer Torah. And there's a lot of question, how is it possible that three Rishonim had a Sefer Torah with an extra vav in it? What's happened? Why should that be? All right, that's a question, how that could happen. But to me, the significance is to draw attention to the fact that that vav is the message of the whole Sedra. The fact that they have a vav and we haven't, that draws our attention. There's something here going on in this letter vav. Now you see it, now you don't, so to speak. The Rishonim seem to have had it, and they all ask, what's it doing there? And we don't have that vav. How can we have a different Sefer Torah? What was in Moshe Rabbeinu's Sefer Torah? Well, we'll only know when Mashiach comes, we'll find out exactly what it should be. The one or two little points to finish with. Where is the central letter in the whole Torah? Says the Gemara in Kedushin, Vav de Gochain is the center of the whole Torah. The center of the Torah is the Vav of Gochain. But that's not true. You count up the letters of the Sefer Torah, it's about 1,000 letters out. I'm telling you now, it's been computerized, it's been counted, the Vav of Gochain is nowhere near the center of the Torah. Yet the Gemara says it's the center of the Torah. What's the pshat in the Gemara? So I'll tell you my pshat. Pshat is like this. The point is, that what they say this pshat I heard from elsewhere. It's quoted in the name of the late Rabbi Zilber, the Russian tzaddik who came from Russia, and he had no svarim at all, and he spent a lot of time, because he only had his chumashim, he didn't have gemaras anywhere. He was there, they took him all away, but so he spent a lot of time working on this type of thing, and he came up with the chiddush. That is the center of the Torah, but not for ordinary letters, for letters which are not ordinary. There are 17 letters which are either big or small. The base of Bereshit is written small. There are 17 such letters in Chumash, and this is the ninth. That's exactly the center of letters which are not normal. No, not normal letters. So when the Gemara says that it's the center of the Torah for letters, you've got to read not the ordinary letters, for the non-ordinary letters it's the center, and that works. But still, what's the Gemara playing at? Why should the Gemara not tell you, Mefurish, that nobody should know that it's what it's referring to? The answer is very simple. The answer is that the center of something is not necessarily the physical center. Where is the spiritual center of something? If I were to say to you, where is the center of the universe? You might say this Pesach Medrash. Or somebody would say that you might see Yerushalayim and HaKodesh. It depends on the center for what. You go to Arsenal or Tottenham, they'll tell you that it's Wembley is the center of the whole earth. For them, that's the center of the world. Where's the center for a Yid? The center for the Yid is this Pesach Medrash. So where's the center of the Torah for letters? The Gemara is telling us the center for the Torah is the Vav of Gochain. That's where the center is. What's Gochain? Kol hoylech al Gochain. Gochain means to crawl along the ground like a ground thing. That means you've got to be an onov. That's the center of the whole Torah. Is for our purposes here, the midas of the Torah, the Vav of Gochain has to be the center that Anova will create the Torah. There's another similar one for words, but we haven't got time for that now because we're over on the time. Maybe on another occasion I'll tell you what the Gemara means about the center of the Torah for words, which is also miles out. But this is the point. Although it has to make sense, and the sense is it's referring to letters which are not the normal letters. So it makes simple sense. But the deeper pshat is the Gemara wanted to come to the center which matters to us, and that is that we should all become Bale Anova, remove the gaiva, remove the chaos, and let's all do what we have to do in order to get to the high point of Torah, and with that, with the good midas and with the Torah, we should then be able to be zeicher to get the Bias HaMashiach. Amen. I'll probably lift one or two things probably left.